Okay, welcome everybody.
Great to have everybody here. We continue our journey, Sefer Bereshit. So, we've dedicated, I'd say, 2.5 shiurim to... Would someone mind closing the door just towards the back, or just half close it? 2.5 shiurim we've given to Abraham. Abraham is Lech Lecha, Abraham is Vayera, and now we hit Chaya Sara. And Chaya Sara just takes Sefer Bereshit, which is this fast-moving book in which every chapter, sometimes even every 10 pesukim, introduces a new story. And we just slow the action right down. Welcome to move the circle back a bit. Take a seat in the front, Rachel.
What?
Sit in the circle, on the back.
Okay.
We slow the action right down, and we've got this long parasha, which is basically only dedicated to two topics. The first is the burial of Sarah, and the second one is trying to find a wife for Yitzhak. And it's sort of a bridge parasha, a bridge between two generations, between two personalities in Bereshit, Abraham and Yitzhak. And Yitzhak, for years I didn't pay any attention to him. I didn't sort of realise the question mark. The question mark with Yitzhak is, who is he? Where is he? How does he fit in Bereshit? The number of stories where he is the active major character are so few. If you can think of more than one story in which he is the active character, if you can think of one story, you're doing well. If you can think of more than one story in which he is the active character, in which he is the major pe'il, as you call it in Hebrew, then, well, I've never found a second one. Okay? What's his identity? That's going to be really our question. And I don't normally make this request, but if you don't think you're going to be here next week, then you should leave the room now. Don't worry. Not really that level of seriousness, but this is a two-part piece. Not really, Rachel. This is a two-part piece because the conclusion that I'm going to finish with this week is not the essential first half for understanding Yitzhak, but it is not the final conclusion that I want you to go home with. Actually, doesn't matter if you're not here next week because you can listen to the recording, which we always make. Let's jump straight in, okay? The way in which I'm going to do things tonight, part of what I want to do is not just learn and share the wonderful stories of Bereshit, but it's also to impart some techniques, if you want to take one and pass on. Impart some techniques of how to read Tanakh. So today, in our trying to get to the heart of Yitzhak, we're going to look at two techniques for studying Tanakh. Tanakh is not just a book that you can open and read and get everything you need out of it. It's a book which you actually have to know how to read it, know what it's the ways in which it unfolds itself. So let's do right at the start. So at the heart of our parasha, really taking up the vast majority of it, is this story of trying to find Yitzhak a wife. Now, where do you go if you live in the times of the Bible, if you want to meet a partner?
The well,
right? The well is where it's at. So that's just what everybody assumed, right? Shosha nizdavgu lahem zivugehem min haba'er, says the Midrash. Three people met their partners at the well: Yitzhak, Yaakov, and Moshe. That's a classic Midrash. In 1983, a scholar at Berkeley called Robert Alter, A-L-T-E-R, published a book called The Art of Biblical Narrative, one of the most important books on Tanakh written. It's really in many ways rejuvenated and sort of started a whole new generation of how to read Tanakh. If you studied at a place like Gush or Eretz Tzvi or Lindenbaum or Migdal Oz, or if you went to many modern Orthodox high schools here, I can guarantee you your teachers have Robert Alter's book on their shelves. In one chapter, Robert Alter discovers something. He discovers what's called a type scene. A type scene is a certain sort of setting which repeats itself time and time again throughout Tanakh, right? And it seems to be just like the Tanakh is full of certain versions of the story. And the first one, and the one that he really dedicates his time to, is the idea of meeting, a person meets their future partner, their future love, at the well. And what Robert Alter demonstrated is that it's not just, oh, here's a sort of a simple cut and paste. Boy meets girl, okay, it needs to take place at the well. But that every time that we see it taking place, the basic elements are all present. However, there are some shifts in each one. There are some shifts which make each scene unique and different from one another. And the shift that takes place is actually going to show you a huge amount about the particular story that we're going to talk about. Okay? Let's make this clear. So here's the seven parts that Alter counts as the heart of the biblical type scene of meeting at the well. So, number one, a man leaves his home. Number two, arrives in a foreign land. Number three, meets a girl, normally described as Na'ara. Number four, she's from his family. Number five, it takes place at a well. Number six, she runs home to tell his arrival. Number seven, he's invited to a meal and they are betrothed, they get engaged. Those are the basic elements which comprise the biblical type scene. Scena tefus, it's called in Hebrew, which is a bit of a difficult word to say. Scena tefus. That describes the type scene. So in order to actually appreciate what's going to take place with Yitzchak, I want to very briefly look at two of the other ones. Okay, so let's divide the room in half. If you, from Tamar to my left, I want you to look at Yaakov. The quote here is Bereshit, chapter 29. If you're from Ellie and Brittany to this side, on my right, then I want you to look at Moshe, which is chapter 2 of Shema. I just want you to briefly read it. And what I want you to try and pay attention, you can read it by yourself, or you can read it b'chevruta. I want you to try and pay attention to is how the scene actually diverges in some interesting way from what seems to be the basic prescribed seven elements that take place. Okay? So, if you're on my right, take Moshe. If you're on my left, take Yaakov. And then we'll open up to see what we've got there. Should we resume? Okay, let's go with Yaakov first. So, people to my left, what do you notice?
Yaakov's a boss.
Very covered. Very covered.
Talking about the.
Yeah.
Does it make you a boss to like break down crying the moment that you see the person you fall in love with? Maybe we'll save that for 2 weeks' time, right? As Yaakov breaking down. Crying?
Well, he cries over her. So it was foreshadows. You could say foreshadows, crying over her when she dies.
Interesting. Very, very, very interesting. Okay, Ben?
In Lavan.
Interesting, right. So Lavan, you're going to really see Lavan's character there as, you know, well, we've already met Lavan earlier on in Parashat Chayesara, but Lavan having the eye for what for the good deal that he can get. How does Yaakov get there? Going to a foreign land is part of the classic, but he arrives.
He was also there first.
He's there. What do you mean he was there first?
Before her.
Ah, interesting. Okay, I hadn't thought of the significance of that. Critically, though, he's fleeing, right? He's on the road, right? Which is seemingly the lifelong theme of Yaakov's life, right? He's always journeying from one place to another. Yaakov's desire is always to settle in one place, and he never actually. Manages to obtain that. To draw water easily. This well scene, as opposed to all other well scenes in Tanakh, what's its great difficulty?
The
well is stopped up, right? Can people connect the dots? What does the well obviously represent? If the well is the heart of the type scene, the well is fertility, right? It's life. And what are you going to know about? It's going to be at the heart of Yaakov's love with Rachel and its great difficulty. Exactly. But unlike her sister, who is able to have multiple children seemingly without any difficulty, for Rachel, the stone is on the well, right? And the very, very first time he meets her, that is already there. Right? So there are other details you can pull out as well, but you've got the basic ones just there. He's on the road, he's fleeing. The rock, that fertility, that difficulty. Rocks in general are at the heart of Yaakov's life, right? The stone he puts his head on becomes the pillow, the symbol, the monument that's set up with Laban at the end of his life, right? The rocks, the hard, unyielding nature of things, right? Yaakov is always a life of struggle, a life of pushing against rocks. Okay, there's definitely more to say, but this isn't our topic. I just want to show it as an example. People with Moshe, what have you got?
Moshe doesn't find the girls, these numerous girls that go back to their father, and then he picks before a few of them.
Exactly. What do you notice with Moshe? What separates him? He doesn't actually meet his wife at the well. He meets a whole group of sisters, and later, you know, in great contrast to Yaakov, who sees her, bursts into tears, kisses her, etc. She's the one, right? He just sees seven of them there, right? So hold that point, and let's add one more point, and then let's try and put it together. Any other thing?
She's not from the family.
She's not from the family. Very, very good. No?
Maybe it's that they don't even rush to tell Yitro what happened. He has to get the information out of them.
Interesting. How long is this type scene? Tiny, right? Six pesukim. It's by far the shortest one in Tanakh. So combine that shortness point with Rachel's point that you don't know actually who he's going to meet. And what you already get here is actually we're going to have much less insight into Moshe's private personal life as a whole. Even though he's going to take up four books of Chumash, he's going to be the major character of Chumash, you actually get much less insight into his own private life than you do, say, with any of the Avot. And that starts right there in the type scene. Who was it who mentioned that she's not from the family? Jessica, right? She's not from the family, and I'll just add one more thing to that. What's Moshe described as? They go back, who have they met? Ish Mitzri, right? Moshe is, in this really weird and interesting way, and I'm sure I'll talk about this at other points over the year, he's the greatest prophet that Israel has ever had. He is the person who leads them out of Egypt. He's the person that takes them to Sinai, who leads them through the desert, and yet he's always an outsider. Right? He is never the heart of the Jewish people. Right? He doesn't come from this great Yichus. Right? If the sort of the great aspiration of Shemot is to marry somebody from your father's people, he doesn't do that. I read one amazing modern commentary that what are Moshe's sons called?
Gershom.
What's Gershom?
Gershom.
Kiger Hayiti Be'eretz Nofria. I was a stranger in a foreign land. That appears once in chapter 3 and once in chapter 18 of Shemot. And this commentary said, that's the pasuk of Moshe's life. Wherever Moshe is, he's a stranger. Right? In the palace, he's the Jewish child who was brought in. On the street, he's the Egyptian aristocrat. In Midian, he's Ish Mitzri. And he's always got this really interesting paradoxical outsider status at the same time as being at the very heart of the Jewish people. And you've got it there in the type scene. Okay, so all the elements are there in both. You see how they differ from each other and how they give you the foreshadowing and the details of what you're going to have. Back to Parashat Chayei Sarah. Right? Back to Yitzchak. Don't worry, I'm not going to read through the whole type scene by any stretch of the imagination, or 60 pesukim or whatever it is. But what do you notice? What are the jarring things that jump out?
It's not actually Yitzchak that goes.
Very good. Spot on. Yitzchak's not there. Right? So if you just take our list once again, right? They all seem to be there, just like they were with Yaakov, just like they were with Moshe. But in each time, one of them, so number four, doesn't really apply to Moshe because the girl's not from his family. Number five is a bit of an interesting one with Yaakov because the well isn't one which is actually giving water. But with Yitzchak, it's number one. It's the most basic one. A man leaves his home. Well, yes, it's true. A person does leave Abraham's home, but it's not Yitzchak. Yitzchak's not there. Yitzchak is the absent character, what should be the very, very heart of his story. That's one point, and that's the major point. And what does it obviously foreshadow? It foreshadows Yitzchak's life as really, and this is part of what we're going to try and unpack, Yitzchak is this character who takes a back seat, in a way. We don't have him at the heart of stories where Abraham and Yaakov are so clearly major activists, where is Yitzchak? He's not even there at the moment of what should be one of the most basic moments for him. Who is the active character? Eliezer?
Eved Abraham.
Eved Abraham. Okay. Well pointed out. I'm not looking for that.
Rivka.
Right? Now, this might not sound so dramatic to our ear, but this is dramatic, I promise you. Rivka is the only woman in Tanakh to draw water from a well. Okay? That might not jump out at you, right? But when you realize how significant this is, it's always men who are drawing water from wells, right? Here, what does Eved Abraham Eliezer see? She's drawing water. She's giving to the camels. She's running. She's drawing. She's there's no word to feed, is there, for the god of liquid? Slake, right? Better not to say it at all, right? Lahashkot, right? She is being mashkeh. She is slating the camel, right? You just got, we don't need to look at it now, but you'll pick it up yourselves when you go through it. You've just got like six words in a row, which are all actives, active verbs, vatarat, vatashkeh, etc., etc. Anyone want to make a suggestion at what that's foreshadowing? What is it giving us a little insight into what's going to come in the future? Noah?
Maybe the Rivka kind of taking front seat and telling Yaakov, go out and hit the lesson.
Spot on. Similarly, Perek Kaf Zayin, chapter 27 of Bereshit, next week's Parasha Toldot, you're going to have once again Rivka, just a flurry of verbs attached to her, and she clothes him, and she gets the food, and she pushes him, Vatagidla, and she tells him, etc. She sort of takes the stage that Yitzchak is not taking. Hannah?
I would say that Sarah also would be very similar. She seems very active. Also, she commands the Egyptians to come and
So I've never really thought about this, but I wonder if we could actually get anything out of it. Abraham and Sarah don't have a well scene. Right? We meet them fully formed. I've never really paid it. I've always registered that, but I've never actually paid any attention to it. Do you think it's got any significance?
That
Abraham and Sarah, we already meet them once they are together. We don't meet them at the beginning of their relationship. Not just Hannah, anyone who's got a thought about that, Brittany?
Well, it's just an interesting thing that like when we first see them, we're encountering their struggle as a couple together.
Abraham and Sarah.
Yeah, when it comes to everyone else, just kind of like individual.
You see them in love, right, for the first time, whereas that's quite a powerful idea. I'm not sure that's a pshat idea. It's definitely a powerful idea for you to take, that, contra the Hollywood version of marriage and love, that it's all about the first time you set eyes on one another and that beautiful sunset, like the first marriage you meet is a couple having difficulty. That's an interesting idea. Hannah's point is definitely spot on, that Sarah, even though she doesn't have a Wilson, she is definitely an active character, Jake.
You have to remember, Abraham meets Sarah and Noach when it's like, this person met this person and they married and they had kids. So they live in Lebanon.
They're part of that world of just...
Right, so it's like a totally different time. Context is so different.
But the Torah could have given us a type scene if it wanted to.
Right,
so odd question of why it doesn't want to. Megan?
That those couples meet each other, they meet as it's like a place where we're on the same ground. They see each other as like, oh, like that person is almost like equal. And then when Rivka meets Yitzchak, she like falls off.
So we're going to come to that.
Oh my god, this person is like so holy and so
We're going to come to that. But that we're going to finish with. Last point from Ben, and then we'll move on.
I heard a couple interesting points on this, that the fact that it wasn't Yitzchak who went to Abraham kind of shows his role that he's...
Sorry, it wasn't Yitzchak who went to Greek.
I mean, Yitzchak who went to the well.
Yeah.
That he's like a transmitter, that his role is Mesora, that it's this Eved Abraham who's dying, he's really a link in a chain. And then also, that like we just mentioned, like Rivka's doing all these active...
I didn't disagree with it, but I just didn't quite get those things together. Why is his not going?
His not going is a form that like, it's a continuation of Abraham, that we have Eved Abraham going to the well, and saying that like we're primarily going to the well to find a companion to help move the Jewish story along, to continue what Abraham is doing. And we see that, like, reverberate when Yitzchak goes and redigs the wells.
Hmm.
So it's just coming up the same story, that, like, he's just continuing, like, after Abraham went through the well, like, Yitzchak is doing Abraham's bidding, not bidding, but he's
nice
continuing the same journey. And then also, I heard the argument that, like, Rivka is more of the Abraham figure in the Rivka-Yitzchak relationship than, like, usually it's the male, but you see, like, her so active.
Very interesting. We'll touch on some of those themes next week. Anyone want to suggest, just in one word? I'll only take answers if they're one word. Why this is? Why does Yitzchak exhibit or not exhibit all of these things? Why is he not there at his own well seen? One word.
Morning.
No, although obviously that makes a lot of sense. Three syllables.
Akeda.
Right. Spot on. Okay? I couldn't believe that I'd given a parasha shiur last week without speaking about the Akeda. Okay, but we're learning Sefer Bereishit. We're not going, it happens to coincide with the parasha happily, but we're trying to get a grip on the book as a whole. And you cannot look at Yitzchak. I hope this just should be obvious just from a basic point of emotion on how anybody's own life, right? You know, it doesn't start with Freud that you need to look at a person's childhood in order to understand the adults they become. You cannot look at Yitzchak's life without looking at the Akedah. Okay? So turn, everybody, to chapter 22. We've done the first thing that we've looked at today. It's page 100, if we've all got the same formash. The final aliyah of Parshat Vayera. We've used one technique so far, which is the type scene, looking what type scenes have in common and looking how they differ to get the first point we want to make about Yitzchak. Now I'm going to introduce you to another technique. Well, I'll get to that technique in a moment. I hope if the fact that you come to the shir means that you like studying Tanakh and you see the Tanakh beauty, then I'm guessing a lot of us also have in common the Akedah. I wasn't here the Shabbat. I did a scholar resident Shabbat in Dallas. And Brittany. And I think I must have spoken about the Akedah 4 or 5 times. It was probably overkill. By the end, but it's nothing like the Akedah. You know, people have heard of the Danish Christian philosopher Kierkegaard, who wrote a whole book on it. In his opening page, I think he says, many have pondered the Akedah, but how many have spent sleepless nights over it? So I can't say I've spent sleepless nights over it, but it's a story that you could spend sleepless nights over. But one of the amazing things is we're just not told almost anything about it. You read through it, and there is just so much lacking in it that you want to know. Tell me if you can answer these questions. What does Abraham look like? What does Yitzchak look like? Obviously, you don't know. Did Abraham tell Sarah he was going to go? Maybe. Maybe not. Here is the one that, and by the way, in saying this, I'm giving like a fast speed version of like one of my favorite introductory pieces on how to read Tanakh, so this is it in shorthand. Here's such an important question. How old is Yitzchak?
Oh, yeah.
So, for some reason, the famous Midrash is that he's 37.
Is it Rashi? Does Rashi calculate it, like, based on when...
So, what... So, why do we get the answer 37? Because the next story, when he gets married, he's 40. Okay?
And you just heard of Rivka being born.
And you hear of Rivka. Okay. So that nevertheless requires a few steps that aren't there. There is another Midrash, which says that Yitzchak is 3. Okay? Now the only point I want to make, now 3:37, that's basically the minimum and the maximum. That's what the Midrash does, because it gives you both possibilities. The only point I want to make is that if he's 3, or if he's 37... those are two completely different stories, right? And the way in which you read it, you know, imagine if it was a film you were watching, it would just completely change. If he's 37, then the questions it raises about him are, why isn't he responding? Why isn't he taking an active part? And why is he so passive? If it's 3, he's a child. He's an infant. The way of the Tanakh throughout is to deprive us of so many details that we would want, But ironically, that then gives us more, right? Because he could be 3 or he could be 37. So both stories hover there as possibilities. Now, there's more to say about this, but I want to show one of them. Although the text tells us so little, that doesn't mean that it tells us nothing. It doesn't mean that it only tells us the basic story. Here is the second technique. I've got a very ugly, clunky title for this technique, but it works. Repetition, repetition, non-repetition. Right? People say, oh, why does the Torah repeat itself? The Torah doesn't waste words, right? Repetition is one of the most basic techniques that the Tanakh uses to give its message across. Okay? There are a couple of phrases in here, in the story of the Akedah, which come and repeat themselves a number of times, and then don't repeat themselves. Don't repeat themselves specifically at a point when you would expect them to repeat themselves. Okay?
Don't we have something like that with Basar v'Chalav? I've read it 3 times, all of the same thing.
Oh, as to why it's mentioned 3 times?
Yeah, 3 times.
You're right. Throughout the Torah, repetition is a...
Yeah.
We learn a lot from it. So there we learn one for cooking it, one for not eating it.
It's a Israel, or something like that.
Exactly. So that's in a halachic context. But I'm also going to claim it's the same when it comes to actually reading the story. Okay? And these things, I'm going to suggest, are actually deeply connected to what's going on between Abraham and Yitzchak and what the impact of the Akedah is on them. See a few people already looking at their formation. Anybody want to suggest what the phrases are that seem to be the key ones that repeat but then don't repeat? So really the whole chapter is what we're interested in. Okay? Let me start with the following. Okay? And ask yourselves the question as we read this, what should happen to the relationship between a father and a son after the story of the Akedah? Okay? So Pasuk Bet, verse 2, in chapter 22. Hashem says as follows, Vayomel kachna, please take, et bincha, 1. Et yechidcha, 2. Asher ahavta, 3. Okay? Take your son, your only son, the son that you love, Yitzchak. And then the story. The story of father and son going for 3 days. And Abraham binds his son and he raises the knife. And at that very moment of him about to slaughter his son, the angel cuts in. I'm on Pasuk Yud Aleph. I'll read this bit quickly. V'yikra elav malach Hashem min ha-shamayim, an angel from heaven calls out, V'yomer Abraham, Abraham, V'yomer hineni. V'yomer, al tishlach yadcha al ha-na'al, don't send out your hand against the youth, al tas lo mu'ma, don't do anything to him, ki ata yadati, because now I know, ki arei Elohim ata, you're fearful of God, v'lo chasachtan, you didn't hold back, and start counting again at everybody. Et bincha, your son, et yechidcha, your only son, and what should be the next word? But it's not there. It goes from Yitzchak goes from being his son, his only son, the son he loves, to being his son, his only son, but the Asher Ahavta is no longer there. That's case number one. Another phrase which repeats itself. You can stay on that page now, on page 102. They go as a group. Abraham, Yitzchak, the donkey, 2 attendants, and then they leave the donkey and the 2 attendants there. Aniv hanan ilchad ko. Pasuk vav, verse 6. Veikach Abraham et atzei haolam. Abraham takes the wood. Veyasem al Yitzchak and puts it on Yitzchak his son. Veikach biyado et haesh ve'atamachet. Takes the fire and the knife. Veyinchush nehem yachdav. And the 2 of them walk together. Right, and that's obviously not just a literal description of their walking together. I know they're walking together from beforehand. Right? It really captures the vision of their relationship. Father and son walking. Then we have this conversation. Vayomer Yitzchak el Abraham Aviv, Vayomer Aviv, Vayomer Hineni, my father, I'm here. Vayomer says Yitzchak, Hinei Ha'esh, V'Ha'itzim, here's the fire, here's the wood, V'Ha'es Olah, V'Yomer Abraham, Elohim Yireh Elohim, so God will show us the offering, B'ni, V'Elchush Nehem Yachdav, and the two of them walk together. So, V'Elchush Nehem Yachdav, V'Elchush Nehem Yachdav. Then the story concludes. Yitzchak is bound, the knife is raised, the angel cuts in, the ram is sacrificed in its place, Abraham is given the blessing, and we're now over on page 104. And what do we read? Pasuk Yutet. Everybody can now go home. However, verse 19, Vayeshev Abraham el Na'ara. And Abraham returns to the two lads, the two attendants who he left waiting before. What's not there? Yitzchak's not there. Ve'yechush nehem yachdav. Ve'yechush nehem yachdav. Ve'yeshev Abraham. The verse carries on. Ve'yakumu, and they go. Ve'yelchu yachdav, and they walk together. But who is it that walks together? Very clearly, it's Abraham, and the two people that he's left there. And then Ve'yeshev Abraham, the Be'er-Sheva. Yitzchak remains on the mountain. Yitzchak stays there. Maybe not literally, maybe he does, but metaphorically, Yitzchak is always there on Har HaMoriah. And I need to be very delicate making this point, right? I think the problem with the Akedah, maybe with any real story in Tanakh, but certainly with the Akedah, there is so much to say about it, and so much has been said about it, that to say anything at all is almost to lessen it, right? It's not to say everything. So, there are a million things to speak about. I don't want you to say, oh, Rabbi Joe said this, so he didn't say everything else. But this is just one thing that jumps out of the text to me. What are the basic points we're getting from this close reading? That whatever Abraham achieves, Beino Ben HaKadosh Baruch Hu, between him and God, now God knows he is Yireh Elohim. And, by the way, I'm not one of those people who thinks that Abraham failed the Akedah. I don't want you to say that, right? I will accept almost every compelling perush of Tanakh, but I don't accept that one. I just can't stomach it. I'm not ever going to say Abraham failed by doing the Akedah. However, I don't think you can read the text, the Pesukim that we've read, any other way. It comes at a tremendous price for his relationship with Yitzchak, which goes from being Bincha Yechidcha Asher Ahavta to just Bincha Yechidcha. It goes from being V'Elchush Nehem Yachdav to being Vayeshev Abraham. Here's just a midrash. You can find a midrash to say anything, obviously, but it's a midrash which comes from the text. Just to make sure that everyone gets where this is coming from. Parashat Vayera, chapter 22, ends with the Akedah. What does the very next story? Death of Sarah. One next to the other. Yatza bat kol v'amra, a heavenly voice came down and declared, min hashamayim, al tishlach yadcha el hana'al, don't send out your hand against the youth. Bo'oto sha'ah, at that moment, halach ha-satan etzel Sarah, the Satan went to see Sarah, v'nizdamen la kedemut Yitzchak, and dressed himself up to look like Yitzchak. Kevan sha'ah oto, when she saw him, amra lo, she said to him, b'ni, ma'aseh lecha avicha, right, Yitzchak appears there, disheveled, dirty, with blood on him, who knows, what did your father do to you? Amar la, he said to her, Natlani Avi, my father took me, Veheleni Harim, Vahoridani Bakaot, took me up mountains, down valleys, Veheleni Larosh Har Echad, took me to the top of one mountain, Ubana Mizbeach, and built there an altar, Vasadeh Hamarcha, and put everything there, Veherichat Haitzim, put the wood there, Vakadoti Al Gabe Hamizbeach, tied me to the altar, Velakachat Asakin, Lashachteni, and took the knife to slaughter me, Veilulesh Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and if God hadn't said, Al Tishlach Yatrael Hanar, don't send down your hand, I would already be dead. Lo hispik ligmor et hadadvar, he didn't manage to finish what he was saying. Ad sheyatza nishmata, she had died from the shock, from the terror of what she had heard. It's a terrifying midrash. It really, really is. I don't even want to say too much about it. But the Parashat Chayisara, the death of Sarah, follows on immediately from the Akedah. It's not by coincidence, according to the midrash, there's a direct cause between them. So we're nearly at the end, and we're building in the basic pieces of Yitzhak's life, of these significant stages. It's not hard to understand why Yitzhak is not there at his own well-seen. He's somebody so deeply affected by it, he doesn't return there with his father. Let's jump right to the end of Parashat Hayesara, the piece that Megan mentioned earlier. Where Rivka and Yitzhak actually do come in contact with one another. It's not, pardon me, it's not right at the very end. Chamishi, anyone got a page? Let's go from bottom of page 118. V'takom Rivka v'narotea, Rivka and all her maidens, they go on the camels, and they go acharei ha'ish, after this man, the servant. V'ikach et ha'eved v'Rivka v'yelech, servant Rivka go. Next verse. Anybody ever paid any attention to this verse? V'yitzchak b'mibo. Anyone want to translate that? B'mibo. Don't look at the English. Try and translate it yourself, as in you'll get a better translation in English. I mean, English isn't bad. Yeah. What's that mean to her? Better to say ba. Ba mi bo.
He was on his way to that place when he decided to instead go to
else. I think you're making it simple. I think Tamar's translation is an excellent one, but it just sounds strange to us. To come from coming somewhere. Sounds like you're constantly doing it. Right? He's always coming back from the gym.
Like he's in the sky. Like not that he's in the sky, but he's on in another.
Right, he's lasuach basadeh lifnot erev is the next verse, right? Vayetzei Yitzchak lasuach basadeh to talk in the evening, which is the pasuk that the Gemara in Brachot learns that Yitzchak composed mincha lifnot erev, etc., etc. But I skipped over something. Where is Yitzchak? Where is he bami boi? Where is he coming from? Coming ber lachai roi. Someone want to translate ber lachai roi? So bear, and it's a well. Huh? A shepherd is ro'i with an ayin. The best translation I heard, the well of the living one who sees me. Anybody know where the well of the living one who sees me is? Come on, you Tanakhists. Come on, you lovers of Sefer Bereshit. Huh? Spot on. Very, very good. Right? Firstly, let's just be clear that at the end of Parashat Chayesara, where do the happy couple set down? Perek Kafe, chapter 25, verse 11, after Abraham has died. Right? Page 122. V'hi acharei mot Abraham, v'yivarech Elohim et Yitzchak v'no, v'yeshev Yitzchak im be'er l'chai ro'i. Yitzchak goes and lives with Rivka, presumably, be'er l'chai ro'i. This is where Yitzchak is. But as Farid points out, we've met it before. Where have we met it? Got a pasuk for us to read? Perek Tet Zayin, chapter 16, pasuk Yod Dalet, verse 14. Hagar fleeing into the desert, pushed out there by Sarah. And she goes and settles. Right there, God calls out for her, says it's okay, I'm going to look after you. Al-Kain Karala Ve'er, Be'er L'chai Ro'i. Be'er L'chai Ro'i is the place that's associated with Hagar and with Ishmael. What on earth is Yitzchak doing, constantly hanging out, Bami Bo, coming, at the place which is all about Ishmael and Hagar? It's amazing, just pay a little bit of attention to geography and you see something crazy. Ben, thoughts? Interesting.
Was he praying there?
Maybe.
Money. Because they got different answers there.
I see. Very interesting. Dorit?
How chronologically does this work with what you said last week with the Midrash about Hagar remarrying?
It doesn't seem that Yishmael is still there, but it's a place which is definitely.
No, you spoke about how.
Oh, this is before that.
Again as a wife.
That's at the end of the parasha.
Okay.
Yitzhak and Yishmael are described as by mouth, so it's pretty interesting that they're together.
Right.
It's not like they have a distant connection, like they're close.
Right. We never read of any argument actually between Yitzhak and Yishmael, right? So this is just one thing I once read. I have no idea if it's true, on a Tanakh basis, or if it's true psychologically. There is a theory apparently in psychology, and I'm so far from an expert, I'm not even going to pretend to be speaking in any sense authoritatively. But that when a person has had something very, very traumatic happen to them, it's so traumatic they're not able to talk about it, and they're not even able to revisit it themselves. One way of coping with it is to transfer it. Do you know the theory that I'm talking about? Is to transfer it to a secondary trauma, like a lesser trauma, which is one which is easier to cope with, right? So we speak all about the Arkada, but going back to our show last week, can you imagine what it would have been like for Yitzchak to have seen his older brother expelled really on account of him, because his mother says, I can't take him being there? Can you imagine what that must have been like to, as a young child, to see your older brother ripped out from your family because of you? So Yitzchak spends his time, his post-Arkada life, in the place where the second most traumatic thing that ever happened to him, that's where he spends his time. I want to finish with one idea, and this will take us to next week. So, Rivka sees Yitzchak, and she has this amazing line, doesn't she? Pasuk Samach Gimel, even Samach Dalet, page 120, second verse there. Vatisa Rivka et einah, Rivka raises her eyes, Vatirei et Yitzchak, and she sees Yitzchak, Vatipol ma'al hagamal. Right? Not Vatired, she got down, what's Vatipol?
No.
Falls off, right? So if Yaakov in the next generation, right, he's the man who can just walk up to the woman he sees and kiss her, and then Rivka, by contrast, is a much more awkward first meeting, right? Falls straight off the camel. Why does she fall off the camel? Presumably she's perfectly good at riding. She's been ridden all the way there. She sees something, right? She's shocked. Vatomer el ha'even, she says to the servant, Miha ish halazeh, who is this person? Ha'olech basadeh, who's walking like there's something about Yitzchak which is shocking. Who knows what it is? But he's not a regular person. Maybe like Megan said, the spiritual elements of him, he's being lasuach basadeh. Maybe just he looks like a terrifying person. What does she then do? So the Eved says, Hu Adoni, this is my master. Vitikach hatzaif batitkas. She takes her scarf and she covers herself. Right, this is where we get the bedekin from in Ashkenazi minhag. Right, she takes the scarf and she covers herself. Okay, next week's parasha, very beginning, Rivka's going to be pregnant, right? And she's going to feel the kicking in her, and she's going to go lidrosh et Elokim to find out what's going on. She's going to get this prophecy, this vision. Shnei lo'umim bevit nech. There are two nations in you, two of them will split out from you. V'rav yavod sa'ira, the older will serve the younger. At least that's how she interprets it. Here's a question, similarly to the question of whether Abraham told Sarah that he was going to take Yitzchak to Har HaMoriah. Did Rivka ever tell Yitzchak that she'd had this prophecy, and this was going to be the prophecy that was motivating everything that she was doing for her sons? Did she ever tell him? We don't know. The text doesn't tell us. Says Vinitziv, Rabbi Nathan Svi Yehuda Berlin, author of wonderful commentary, the Emet Davar, and Rivka put the scarf over her face, and she never took it off. Maybe she never took it. Maybe that doesn't mean physically, but literally. There was always a barrier between them. Vinitziv, unlike Abraham's relationship with Sarah, and unlike Yaakov's relationship with Rachel, they didn't speak in the normal way. Maybe Yitzhak is just that sort of character who you couldn't have a normal family relationship with, right? And when something extremely important occurs to Rivka, for whatever reason, maybe it's also a failing on her part, but you also can understand where it's coming from, the scarf is between her and Yitzhak. She doesn't tell him. And what a role, if you take the Netziv, and I find it quite compelling, what a role that insight is going to play in the stories that are going to come. But I couldn't finish this class being completely doom and gloom, so I want to just end with something. This is Drash, but it's very, very beautiful Drash. A piece by Elie Wiesel. And here is something to think about Yitzhak with for the parasha. Volunteer to read? Dorit, will read for us?
As the first survivor, I would like to suggest to future survivors of Jewish history that it is possible to suffer and despair in our lifetime and still not give up the art of laughter. What happened to Isaac after he left Moriah? He became a poet, author of the Mincha Service, and did not break up society, nor did he rebel against life. Logically, he should have aspired to wandering, the pursuit of oblivion. Instead, he settled on his land, never to leave it again, retaining his name. He married, had children, refusing to let fate turn him into a bitter man. He felt neither hate nor anger towards his contemporaries who did not share his experience. On the contrary, he liked to show concern for their well-being. After Moriah, he devoted his life and his right to immortality to the defense of his people, as it transforms his suffering into prayer and love rather than into rancor and it is possible to suffer and despair an entire lifetime and still not give up the art of laughter. Isaac never freed himself from the traumatizing scenes of his youth. The Holocaust had marked him and continued to haunt him forever. Yet he remained capable of laughter, and in spite of everything, he did laugh.
Thank you. Have a wonderful week, everybody.
Thank you.